Some of the children also had private goals, those they did not want to share with others. They were afraid that someone else might think they could never attain them. The father respected this privacy. Whatever the goals were, each child now felt more in control of his or her own life. It wasn't just what the parent wanted that was important. They began to assume some responsibility for running their own lives, and they enjoyed it. The little one had even gotten in on the act. She drew pit tours of what she wanted and called them her goals. The father was pleased. It was no longer his system of one-minute goals, one-minute praisings, and one-minute reprimands. It had become the children's system as well. Life at home had become more enjoyable for the one-minute father and his children, but that was not the case elsewhere. Meanwhile, on the other side of town, another father, a younger man, and his wife were beginning to look at the way they were raising their children. They had talked it over and they both agreed. Their two children were getting out of hand. Neither the 9 nor the 6-year-old listened to or was considerate of their parents. They were doing poorly in school and getting into skirmishes in the neighborhood. The man didn't know how often the children's equally frustrated mother had said, "Just wait until your father comes home, you'll be sorry." The children threatened with his arrival never knew that he thought he was just coming home to his castle, a peaceful fortress from the world. He had enough challenges at work and longed for the peace and quiet of his own home, but all too often he was greeted with, "I don't mean to bother you, honey, but do you know what the kids did today? I want you to do something about it. I just can't deal with it by myself." The young couple knew they didn't want their children to turn out like some of the other undisciplined youngsters who lived nearby, who ran roughshod over their parents and everyone else. So the young man spanked his children, and when that didn't work, he tried spanking them harder, but he did not feel good about what he was doing. He reminded himself of the joke about the man who threatened his son. "If I see you hit your little brother even once, I'll hit you so hard." As the couple looked around at the other parents in the neighborhood, they became more discouraged. It seemed to them that many other parents were in the same boat, a leaky one at that. They were confused, not knowing how much freedom to allow or how much control to apply. No one had ever told them how to be parents. The truth was that they never thought much about raising children, but they knew they needed to learn. The young man expressed his frustration. Other men in the neighborhood agreed. "It's not like it used to be," many of them said. "Things are changing so fast that just when we learn the rules, they change the rules on us. Who knows what our families want from us?" The man understood all too well how so many of the other fathers felt. In a way, he was relieved to learn that he was not the only one. The younger father's situation continued to grow worse. The problems he and his wife were having with the children put a stress on the marriage. And as his life at home became more unpleasant, it began to affect his work. Finally, he sought professional help. He heard the advice of marriage and family counselors, psychiatrists, social workers, pediatricians, and psychologists. He learned useful bits and pieces from many of them, but was still confused. Then a good friend told the young father about the man who lived in his neighborhood. After going through a difficult time himself, this man was apparently raising 5 marvelous children. Best part of all was that he had developed a simple and effective parenting method which was easy to learn, and the man was willing to share it with other parents. The young man telephoned and introduced himself. "To tell you the truth, I'm pretty confused. I would really appreciate it, sir, if I could come over and talk with you about being a father." "Certainly," the older man said. "Why don't you come Saturday morning? I'll be glad to help." That is, he added, "on one condition." Then the one-minute father laughed and said, "It's nothing to worry about, I assure you. It's just that what I will tell you is so simple that it's hard for some people to believe how well it works. So I would just ask you to wait before you pass any judgment on it until you've tried it in your own home for a few weeks." The young father agreed. On Saturday morning, as the younger man drove up to the impressive house, he thought, "This man is obviously successful. No wonder he's a good father. He's probably smarter than me." The young man paused, and then he stopped, putting himself down, remembering that his own father had done enough of that long ago. He wanted to change. The young father was greeted at the front door by a gray-haired man who seemed physically fit and whose bright eyes gave the impression of someone in the midst of a happy life. "Come in," the older man said. "I'm glad you came over to see me." "You are?" the surprised young man responded. "Yes. Frankly, I'm pleased that someone else is just as confused as I was and just as keen to learn how to do better. And that was not that long ago." "You? You were in the same situation?" The father smiled and said, I knew a good deal about some things, but not much about fathering. As Will Rogers said, we're all ignorant. We're just ignorant about different things. The younger man began to relax. He slowly admitted his greatest fear. I don't know. I'm afraid I have to do things just right or I'll harm my children. Sometimes I think you have to be perfect to be a good parent. The father started to laugh. Then he said with a smile, fortunately, nothing could be further from the truth. Every father is going to make mistakes just as he does with many other parts of his life. And his children are going to know it too. So what do you do, the young man asked, when you make a mistake? Well, I used to try and cover it up, but the first thing I do now is admit it. My children really appreciate it when I can admit to making a mistake. It means they can do the same with me. And next, if the mistake is not a terrible one, and most aren't, I let myself laugh about it. Laugh about it? The astonished man asked. Yes, laugh at your own human follies, and you teach your child to laugh at his. Anyone who can be honest enough to admit quickly that he was wrong and then laugh at his own imperfections will never have a nervous breakdown. The young man nodded and said, it sounds like a great way to take a lot of stress out of your life. It is, the father said. And another way to reduce stress is not to wait for large blocks of time. Time enough to do things just right. There never seems to be enough time to do everything you want to do, let alone time enough to do it just right. And that includes the time required to be a good father. The younger man nodded his head in agreement and asked, so what's the answer? Let me say first of all, the 1 minute father cautioned, that I do not have all the answers to raising children. I am simply fortunate enough to know a few small things that you or any other parent can learn, and they will make a big difference. There are probably as many answers to raising children, the father said, as there are parents. However, a point of view that I find useful is this. I simply let my children know, by the way I treat them, that I am glad they are who they are. Well, that's very good, the young man reflected. The father suggested, rather than give you the answers, why don't I just tell you what I do, and then you can adapt it in the way you feel will work best for you and your family. Fine, the younger man said, I'm listening. Before I tell you what to do, however, you should know that I don't always do it. What? The surprised visitor said. Father shrugged his shoulders and admitted, I'm like any other parent. I don't always do what I know I should do. But when I do, things are a lot better. First, let me tell you that I no longer worry about the amount of time I spend on my parenting. I just make sure that, balanced with the other responsibilities and the enjoyments I have in life, I do try to spend as much time as I can with each of my children. The visitor smiled and said, I'm glad to hear that. When I first heard that they called you the 1 minute father, I got the impression that you might rush through whatever you did with your children, and that, in fact, you spent very little time with them. The father returned the smile. You're right to be concerned about such a possibility. The important thing to know is this. Since I have learned to use a simple three-part communication system, which takes no longer than 1 minute at a time to use, literally every minute I spend with my children has been enhanced. But before I tell you about the three specific methods of communication, let me first say that I spend time alone with each child, even if it's only for a few minutes, and I never compare one child to another. And second, I am totally present. I try to concentrate fully on whichever son or daughter I am with at the moment. So you really stay in the present moment? Yes. When I am at home now, I think only about my home life, and when I'm at work, I think only about my work. It's a big help in both arenas. The visitor said, yes, my friend told me that you were becoming as successful at home as you have been elsewhere. That must make you feel pretty good. It does, the father said with some pride, especially because my children are experiencing the same feelings of success. It has been easier on all of us since I realized that my two main goals as a parent are to help my children gain self-esteem and self-discipline, and in that order, the father added. I have learned the painful way that children who like and appreciate who they are, that is, who have self-esteem, develop self-discipline as a favor to themselves. If they like themselves enough, they will want to take care of themselves, and one of the best ways anyone can do that is by developing self-discipline. Is that, the younger father asked, what the 3 1-minute methods of communication do for the children? Almost, the father responded, it's more what they help children do for themselves. Then he added, in fact, my children are now using these same three methods to communicate with me and each other. At the visitor's request, the father described in detail 1-minute goals, praisings, and reprimands. The younger man listened intently. Then he said slowly, maybe that would work for me. You don't sound too sure, the father commented. I'm not sure, the visitor said. Maybe it would help me if I could understand why the three communication methods work so well for parents. Just why do 1-minute goals, 1-minute praisings, and 1-minute reprimands help children like themselves and behave themselves? You want to know why 1-minute goals work so well with children? Let's begin, the father suggested, by looking at how the human mind works. Most scientists recognize that the mind has two parts, the conscious mind, the younger man interjected, and the subconscious mind, the part that is aware and the part that's unaware. Right. And the powerful part of the mind is the subconscious. We may not be aware of it, but it is recording everything that it sees and hears. The most amazing thing is that the subconscious mind has no filter on it. It lets in anything and everything. It has the basis for our beliefs. Anything that goes into our subconscious often enough tends to become a belief, like whatever we are frequently told as children, the young man said. When we tend to believe, even if we may not think it's true, that's exactly the point. You probably know children who have been told they were stupid or clumsy. They come to believe that it's true. The young man remembered in his own childhood, and then they act as though it were true. Yes, the father said. And when children act as though something is true, it becomes true, the young man completed. And that, the father said, is the basis why 1-minute goals work so well, because this is an easy way for people to put what they want into their subconscious minds over and over again until they believe it. And, as we said, when you believe it, you will act as though it were true. What if the goals are unrealistic, the young man wanted to know. Well, that's the beautiful part of the system. The subconscious mind has no filter. It lets everything in. It doesn't know what's realistic and what isn't. Only the conscious mind functions on that level. I'm not sure I understand, the younger man admitted. Let me give you an analogy, the father said. Imagine a farmer planting seeds in the soil. The fertile soil is very like the subconscious mind. It doesn't care what kind of seed you plant, nutritious like corn and wheat, or poisonous, deadly nightingale, for example. The soil will grow whatever you plant. It doesn't care. The young man saw the point. And so will our subconscious minds. Exactly. Now you understand why 1-minute goals work so well. Because, the younger father said slowly, you can read and reread your goals in only a minute, which is a convenient way to repeatedly put them into your subconscious mind, and thus you come to believe in them and eventually to act on them. That's a marvelous capsule explanation of why 1-minute goals are so effective with children and with ourselves. Is that all there is to it? Not quite, the father said with a smile. But a good focus for now is we become what we think about. That's a terrific thought, the young man said. I think I'm going to use it myself. Interesting you would say that, the father said with a smile. The visitor looked puzzled. The father admitted, of all the things I learned in the recent past, that is one of the most important. Remember that I said that I was not as successful at home as I was elsewhere? Well, take an educated guess. Why? The young man was embarrassed. He didn't know what to say. He was amazed that the older man could be so vulnerable. I gather it has something to do with what we're talking about. Yes, it does. Could it simply be that you didn't have a happy home life because it wasn't one of your goals? As amazing as it may sound, that is precisely right. I had taken it for granted, as if it were my right, my reward for working so hard in my job. The younger father knew the feeling. I've solved that problem now, the father said. I have my own family life goals clearly written down. I refer to them frequently. And, of course, the more often I see them, the more apt I am to achieve them. I think of this as my popcorn principle. What? The young man asked. The father laughed. You may have heard of that experiment they did in movie theaters until it was outlawed. They flashed a picture of buttered popcorn on a screen and the words, buy popcorn. It came off and on so fast no one saw it. But I'll bet the younger father figured out that people's subconscious minds saw it, right? That's exactly right. And guess what? The visitor said. They sold a lot of popcorn, and that's the whole point. The subconscious mind has a positive influence on our behavior. Unfortunately, the opposite is also true. For example, a couple of Saturdays ago, I was reading the sports section of the paper. A pro golfer who was leading at the end of three rounds was quoted. He said, I'm a scarecrow golfer. When the reporter asked him what he meant, he said, I scare a lot of the big guys. In other words, the young father said, he thought himself as almost winning. He saw himself as only scaring the best golfers in the game, just giving them a close call. Sure, the next day I looked at the paper. Guess what? He shot the last day of the tournament. The visitor shook his head from side to side, afraid of what the answer would be. The father said, of course. He shot a 76, just high enough to finish out of the big money. You don't win by thinking about losing. Then the father looked at his watch. It's almost time. Time for what? The younger father inquired. It's our family Saturday morning gathering. The children are aware of your visit and have agreed that you may join us for a party if you like. The young father eagerly joined the children in the dining room. He wasn't sure what to expect. The visitor was surprised to see that the children ran a good deal of the meeting. They reviewed their goals individually and as a family, and they gave one another praisings and reprimands. There was a good deal of good-natured kidding and laughing, but there was no doubt that these five children were beginning to run their own lives, and with some success. Toward the end of the meeting, the older boy said, "You know how one of these goals is to take care of each other? Well, I read where 150,000 kids are kidnapped every year. They say having fingerprints on record would help identify a lost child. Why don't we make fingerprints of baby sis's fingers?" "How?" one of the others asked. "We'll just get an ink pad and an index card and do it ourselves. We'll keep the card here at home." One of the girls put her hand on his arm and said, "Big bro, you obviously care about little sis, and you've come up with a really good idea. I want you to know how good that makes me feel." The children broke into mock applause for the praising, but it was easy to tell they meant it. "Let's do it for all the kids in the family," one of them suggested. Everyone agreed. After the meeting broke up, the children left for the local stationery store to put their plan into action. "That's amazing," the visitor said. "A few short months ago, I would have thought it was amazing too," the father admitted. "But that's what's happened since I started catching my children doing something right, or even approximately right. You can't believe the difference it has made in each of my children." "So why do you think the one-minute praisings work so well?" the visitor wanted to know. "Because more than any other thing I know, the feedback they receive helps them feel good about themselves. All too often I used to forget to recognize my children when they were doing well." The young father smiled and said, "I saw a great cartoon about that recently. It shows Dennis the Menace sitting in the corner with a tear in his eye, and he says, 'How come I don't have a special place to sit when I do something nice?'" The father laughed. "Now that I think of it," the younger father said, "I don't give my children much attention either when they're behaving well." "Believe me," the father assured the visitor, "when you do, it will be a great help to them. And if you want to help your children develop quickly, just remember, feedback is the breakfast of champions. And the best feedback is one the children can see for themselves. The best way for children to believe they are winners is for them to see themselves as winners. The greatest example of this," the father said, "is obviously the absolutely true story about the father who set things up so his small son would win, regardless of what the child did." The younger father laughed. "It sounds like the boy is going to grow into a real winner." "Of course he is," the one-minute father responded. "How did the father do it?" the visitor asked. "He taught his son how to bowl. Like a lot of other fathers. However, he did things differently than most of us do with our children. He had the automatic pin machine set up the 10 bowling pins as usual. Then, to his friend's amazement, the father set up several additional pins. He placed them at the end of the gutter." "At the end of the gutter?" the astonished young father asked. "Did you say the gutter?" "Yes," the older man replied. "Of course, we both know that when you throw the ball so badly that it goes down the gutter, you get a zero score because you miss all the pins." "So why did he do it?" asked the young man. "I'll answer your question by asking you one. Knowing that the boy was just learning and that he was only 4 years old, where do you think the little guy was going to throw the ball?" The young father smiled. "I'm afraid he's going to throw it in the gutter." Sure, and most of us fathers would be literally afraid of the same thing. But this father didn't care where his son's ball went. He always moved the pins in front of the ball. The young man laughed. "I love it. Isn't that great? No matter where the small fry threw the ball, he was a winner." The young man nodded his head and smiled. "When the young man grew up, what do you think he became, other than a winner, which he did do? A professional bowler. You guessed it. A very prosperous professional bowler. In fact, many years later, after winning more money than any other bowler on the tour, he was asked what was his key to success was. Nelson Burton spoke about his father with pride. "I don't ever remember missing," he said. "I had an unusual dad." Both men quietly thought about what they had just heard. Each would like to have had such a father himself. Now they wanted to be like that for their children. The younger father said, "That story reminds me of what another father did for his another little boy. To help his son learn to play basketball, he encouraged the youngster to drop little tennis balls into a big waste paper basket. Again, the kid couldn't miss." It's funny, though, how I never thought of doing something like that for my son, he confessed. The one-minute father smiled and said, "Somehow I think you're going to. And the more you do it, the more you will bring out the best in your child." "Is that why catching a child doing something right works so well?" the young father asked. "Because it brings out the good that's already there. That's exactly why it works. Each of us is capable of using good judgment, making good decisions if we're rewarded for doing so. Why do you think that children have this inherent wisdom within them?" the young man asked. "Because you can see it every day. Just watch children live their lives. Like us, they do very well when they learn to trust what their gut is telling them. In fact, there was once an interesting study that illustrates just how well children know what is best for them. A special cafeteria was set up in a school, one that was divided into two halves. One half had all the goodies, ice cream, pizza, candy, and so on. The other side of the cafeteria was stocked with equally attractive items, but they were much more nourishing foods, the kind that children were often told that they were supposed to eat. Then the social scientists who were doing this study told the children, "You may eat in the cafeteria every day. You may choose anything you want, and it won't cost you or your parents anything." "That," the young man said, "sounds like a pretty good deal." The one-minute father smiled and said, "Sure. Now, what do you think happened the first day the children descended on that cafeteria?" The young father replied, "If they were anything like my children, they ate all the junk food they could get their hands on." "That's exactly what happened." "And what do you think happened on the second day?" "Same thing," the young father answered. "Essentially, yes," the father confirmed. "But by the end of the second week, what do you think the children did?" "Remember," the father cautioned.